In my experience, about 60 to 70%, I would say, of the mothers of these girls who were being abused supported the offender.
It was so common, it was the theme of the movie Precious. And it's such a horrible thing, and hopefully people are horrified by it.
He says, well, I'm calling the police. And she says, do what you gotta do, but she's not leaving with you.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hello and welcome to Best Case, Worst Case. This is Jim Clemente, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor and writer-producer of CBS's Criminal Minds, and still with Criminal Minds in season 16 on Paramount Plus. And with me today, thankfully from afar, is...
Hi, everybody. It's Francie Hakes, former state and federal prosecutor and executive producer and writer on Audible's Midwest Monster. Jim, I'm very excited because we have a brand new guest today, someone who's never been on the podcast in all five years now?
Seems like an eternity, actually.
But... Definitely 5 years. And so, Heather, introduce yourself to our listeners, please.
Well, hello. My name is Heather Brown, and I am a former deputy district attorney here in Orange County, California. And I just retired in March, the end of March of this year, from the homicide unit. And prior to that, I was in the sexual assault unit for 10 years. And now I opened up my own shingle. I do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And I work with a civil firm called Greenberg Gross, helping them litigate cases in the sexual assault arena.
Wow.
Civilly.
Wow.
Awesome.
And I'm going to bartending school, which is also
Oh, well,
fun.
Now that just sounds fun, Heather. We just know you're a fun person.
Well,
but
maybe.
Again, you're
maybe
an assistant DA or deputy DA, so of course you're fun.
Well, maybe we should ask her, Francie, if she can make our favorite drink.
That's true, Heather. Jim and I have the same exact favorite cocktail.
The only thing that we have actually in common that we like is...
We love garlic bread, Jim.
Yeah, well, that's true. But that you can't drink that. Well, some of you can. Really soaked garlic bread is good, too. But anyway, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, of course...
Cocktails.
Lemon drop martinis.
Martinis. Oh, I love lemon drop martinis. They're my favorite. I do know how to make a mean one. Yeah.
Ah, there you go.
Oh, it sounds like
party
a date
time, everybody.
When I'm in LA next, Jim.
Oh, for sure.
Well, let's get down to brass tacks here, though. Heather, it's so nice to see you. This is our first meeting in Zoom land. And you have a very special husband, do you not?
He is very special. He's a former special agent with the FBI.
You got to love a guy like that, right, Francie?
Just like one other guy that I know on this podcast.
Yeah.
The question is the special really deserved?
Yeah.
What about just
a capital
agent?
S? No, come on. Give me a break.
Whenever his buddies who were agents would be coincidentally on a case that I was handling and they'd testify, I would ask my husband, do you know this guy? And when he'd give me the scoop on him, like, is he cool? Is he okay if I mess around with him on the stand? So whenever he introduced me, like, I'm Special Agent Tim White or, you know, whatever, I'd be like, what's so special about you? And you didn't see his face because they don't do that in federal court.
No, they don't.
Definitely not. There's
but
no joke around.
There's no joke
around. Well, I like the fact that you do have a sense of humor, even in court. And you wouldn't have any way of knowing this yet, but when I was in court, one of the judges that I prosecuted cases in front of was Judge Judy Scheinlund, AKA Judge Judy. And she was very strict, but she also had sort of a cool sense of humor. And sometimes, you know, you didn't want to be the butt of her humorous jokes in the middle of a trial, but every now and then it was kind of funny. And she stopped one of the trials that I was doing and said off the record, she goes, ACC Clementi, that's Assistant Corporation Counsel for the city of New York, are you wearing a sharkskin suit? And I said, yes. And she said, well,
sharks.
It's so good to see, because everybody else from your office wear those stupid blue pinstripes, you know, so it was kind of funny.
But I mean, if sharkskin suit, Jim, I mean, what were you, a 40s mobster?
How did you know? It was 50s, though. yeah, I bought all my suits at thrift shops down on 8th Street in Lower Manhattan. And yeah, so they were cool. They were really cool. Anyway,
I don't even know what a shark skin suit is.
It's kind of gabardine.
No one does.
It's kind of shiny and
it looks kind of shiny
from the 50s. From the 50s, you know, they were very popular back then. Well, you think that, but you know, who are you? Anyway, let's talk about this. First of all, your career. You said you just retired.
I just retired March 23rd.
Wow. Tell us a little bit about the span of your career. What did you do over the years of your career?
I have had some of the craziest cases ever in my career. I obviously started as a baby DA. I was a DA for 24 years. Mm. So there's been I started in 1998. And so, you know, when you're a baby DA, you know, you do misdemeanors and you work your way up.
I started in 96.
Oh, wow.
I became a profiler in 98.
See, the 90s were good. The late 90s
were
good.
They were good.
Yeah.
So, you know, I worked my way up in the ranks and I did misdemeanors and then I did felonies. And then you get a little more complex cases and they kind of look at your track record and see if you're winning cases. And if you try a lot of cases, that's a good thing as a DA. And so I moved my way up and I started doing more serious cases. I would do robberies and, you know, stolen cars and those kind of generic crimes, a lot of drugs and various different shenanigans. And then I moved into the sexual assault unit and where I stayed and for about 10 years. And so I had a federally funded grant caseload. So all of my victims were 10 and under and just horrible crimes of children being raped and sodomized. So
horrible cases.
Yeah, just horrible cases. And I had done it for 7 years and I tapped out. Most people don't last more than 4 or 5 years in that unit. But after 7, I said, I need a little break from the subject matter. And then I became what's known as a team leader. And I actually, I got some of the craziest cases ever. One of the cases that I worked on was, I don't know if you heard about it, a marijuana grow dispensary owner was kidnapped and is from his home in Newport and taken out to the desert. And three men kidnapped him and took him out to the desert. They thought he had money buried in the desert. And wow. So they proceeded to burn him, whip him, tase him and shock him and try to get him to tell him where the money was. And they proceeded to cut his penis off and then pour bleach all over his body.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
That was a horrible case. That was my break from sexual assault.
Oh, yeah. That's your break. That is your vacation from bad cases.
Yeah. And then I had another case where this lady faked her pregnancy for 9 months, had a baby shower and everything. And then after 9 months, she needed a baby. So she befriended a lady at a pregnancy clinic.
No,
and
cesarean abduction?
Yeah. Well, no, she waited for the lady to have her baby naturally.
Kind of
then wasn't that nice? And then she proceeded to try to kidnap her a couple days later, kidnap the baby. And she ended up stabbing the lady in front of her other two children. And the victim, the woman, was like mama bear. And she was able to bite the lady's finger off. But the lady still got the baby. But fortunately, some neighbors heard the commotion and they came in and rescued the lady and the baby. So I was prosecuting her.
Yeah. And people wonder why law enforcement and prosecutors are cynical people or weird people, or that we have weird gallows senses of humor. You're listening to Heather talk and now you know why.
And why we drink a lot of tequila. So
that's why we have a lot of lemon drop martinis. That's right.
A lot of lemon drops.
Yeah.
So yes. So that was kind of, I've had a bunch of different crazy cases. And obviously in the sexual assault land, there's a zillion of them. I could tell you stories all day long.
Well, we will get to that, and we would love to have you come back and tell us more details about some of those crazy cases. But today, this particular case or issue you want to talk to us about, what part of your career were you in when this sort of came up?
I was in the sexual assault unit. This was in 2013 when I learned about the case. It didn't actually go to trial until 2016. So, you know, but I was in there for so long. I had it for a few years before it actually went to trial. But when I received the case, it was in 2013.
Okay. And do you remember what you were doing exactly when that day when the case came to you?
Not the moment the case came to me, but I do remember when, you know, you have so many cases on your caseload, there comes a moment where you focus on that particular case, right? Okay. You have, you know, anywhere from 30 to 40 cases on your caseload. So you're managing them and you're in one, you're not thinking about the others at that moment. So when it did, when I did turn my attention to, oh, wow, this case is coming up for trial, we need to try this case. I mean, I do remember the moment I read through the case and I really thought, oh, wow, this is a bad guy.
Okay, so what were you doing at that moment? Like, what was going on in your office? What were you doing? Like, bring us back to that date and time.
I was in the sexual assault unit and I was in my office and I worked with an investigator who was the most amazing investigator on the planet.
See, investigators are great people, right?
Great people.
I agree.
Okay. Just want you to say that
100%.
Out loud in front of Francie, who's like constantly demeaning us as FBI agents. Anyway, so what was his name again?
His name was John Bierling, and he had been a police captain for 25 years. And then he came to the DA's office as an investigator. And if you ever needed anyone found, John was the guy to find him.
Wow.
He was very creative. You know, a lot of investigators just leave their business card, and not John Bierling. He would he could find anyone anywhere.
That's a skill.
He had mad skills, and it didn't matter. He would, you know, go. He would text me from these crazy spots, like, "I'm in a séance right now." Like he would. I just bought this lady her third, you know, grand slam at Denny's, and he would do anything he had to find people. And
wow.
I remember telling John when I read it. Because he had emailed me, hey, on this trial, we don't have our victim. We can't find her. And so she was a young teenager. And I said, you need to find her. I need you to find her. And we sat down, you know, he came in my office, sat on my couch. And I said, JB, we got to find this girl. I don't care what we have to do. And so we had about 3 weeks lead time before the trial. And so John got a couple leads on her. And he started working it up, and we created phony Facebook pages to try to find her, and he ultimately found her in this like flop house.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Can you talk about that a little bit? You know, when I had cases as an assistant DA, it was very different from being a federal prosecutor. I think the job of being an assistant DA is far harder than it is to be a federal prosecutor from a resource standpoint. And that's a great, this is a great example of it. Tell us how you lose a victim. I mean, because that sounds weird to people who've never worked inside the system. I totally get that. We lose victims, we lose witnesses all of the time. But how does that actually happen? Because it's not like Law and Order, where the police make the arrest and the next day you're in trial. It does not work that way.
It doesn't work that way at all. There's sometimes years that go by before a case actually goes to trial. And there are various reasons for that. I mean, just too many to even mention. But
a couple of factors can be if the offender's not in custody, the case can linger.
That was this case.
Right.
So, yeah, no one's in a hurry, especially when they're facing life charges, which he was.
That's right.
And he had posted $1 million bail. So he was out of custody. And let me tell you, he and his attorney were in no hurry to go to trial. They were in no hurry.
Why don't we back
up?
Can you tell us? So the case had been sitting for a while because he was out of custody. So tell us the facts of the case, what you learned when you opened the case file, you're going to trial in 3 weeks and you realize you don't have the victim. Tell us the facts of the case.
So the facts of the case were the defendant, he was dating this gal, which I later learned he met on Match.com and moved her and her two daughters in to his home maybe a week later. And so, which, you know, anyway, that's another story. But
super foolish, right?
He moves them in, and when this little girl was about 12, he started molesting her, unbeknownst to anybody. Geez. He was having sex with this little girl. And so when she was 13 years old, so this had been going on for about a year, she got in a fight with her mom and she kind of, you know, ran to school that day and then went to a neighbor's house or friend's house after school. And she tried to go home that day and mom was like, no, you're going to have to wait for Jeff. Jeff was the name of the defendant. You're going to have to wait for Jeff to come home. And so mom wouldn't let her in the house. So she went back to her friend's house. And when Jeff did get home, because he was a school teacher, when he got home, he went over to the friend's house to pick her up and she was terrified to go with him. Mm-hmm. And she told her friend's mom, I don't want to go with him. I don't want to go with him. And so the friend's mother thought something's weird. Something's not right here. And right. So Jeff was like, I want her, tell her to come out here. She's, you know, incorrigible. And so the mother bear, I love the mother bears in these stories. Mother bear, she said, you know what? You're too upset. I'm not letting her go with you. And he said, well, I'm calling the police. And I kind of love that little nugget of the story when you hear the rest of the story. He says, well, I'm calling the police. And she says, do what you got to do, but she's not leaving with you.
Good so mom. He called, good mom.
Right?
Good surrogate mom in this
Unfortunately,
case.
Unfortunately, it's not the child's actual mother.
Oh, and no truer words have ever been spoken when I tell you the rest of the story.
Okay.
Let me just say this. Because I want to know in advance, Heather, if you agree with my statistics. When I was an assistant DA, I focused on crimes against children as well. And in my experience, about 60 to 70%, I would say, of the mothers of these girls who were being abused supported the offender. And so when we went to court, it was me, the victim, and the victim witness person, you know, the advocate. And on the other side of the courtroom was defendant, child's mother, and then the rest of the family. How do you like my 60 to 70% estimate?
I didn't find to be that high of a percentage. However, I think it's more maybe like 40 that I saw, 40%. There's a lot
it's
of
still too many.
Out there, but it's too many. And I have to say, it could be a product of the fact that I was, you know, dealing mostly with kids 10 and under. I don't know if that had something to do with it, but it's despicable. That's
it is
many.
Despicable. So sorry, I know I did what Jim says I always do, and I did interrupt. Which, by the way, I hear you, listeners on Apple reviews saying, "I hate Francie; she's always interrupting." Well, that's just tough because that's the way I do it. Because I want to know, and I want to make sure
I don't
you really know.
Hate when Francie interrupts. I just love making fun of her. That's the important
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. People are so rude about it on sometimes on Facebook, but mostly on the Apple reviews. Anyway, which I only look at like once every 6 months, just so people know. So if you're reviewing, did you think I'm looking? I'm not. But so Heather, so back to your story, and I apologize for interrupting. Back to your story. So you've got Jeff threatening to call the police. Can I just say, by the way, I don't usually cuss on this podcast, but what a dumbass.
What a dumbass.
But fortunately, an awful lot of child abusers are dumbasses.
What was the curse in that? I didn't hear curse.
Ass.
Oh, please.
Ass.
That's not a curse.
Anyway, I'm not New Yorker.
I'll tell you how
so
to
I,
curse.
I don't drop the F-bomb generally.
All right.
But so Heather, whatever. So he says, you know, give her to me or I'm calling the police. So what happens next?
So he calls the police because he can't get this incorrigible. And it's not his daughter. It's his stepdaughter to go with him. Not even stepdaughter. Not even married. She's mom's boyfriend. But anyway, she, the police
Sally's
come.
Sally's mom's
he
boyfriend.
He talks to the little girl and she basically... at first it's like, I don't want to go with him. I'm afraid he's going to hit me. I'm scared. And then she goes, can I talk to you for a minute? And then she says, the reason I don't want to go with him is he's been having sex with me since the time, you know, from the time I was 12 until I was 13.
Wow.
So the police officer is like, what? So he, plays it off really cool and says, hey, listen, and makes it seem like she's maybe complaining about mom and maybe some trouble between her and her mother, which clearly there is. What it ultimately was mom was jealous because she suspected something was happening with her boyfriend
so
and her daughter.
So disgusting.
So she ends up going, he takes her down to the police and she gets a sexual assault exam and guess whose semen comes back in the little 13-year-old girl's, you know, cervix.
I just think that is so significant that you said that because I'm trying to remember the number of cases or even a percentage of cases where I had DNA evidence like that in cases of sexual abuse.
Of
and it was very rare.
Because of delayed disclosure.
Well, it is very rare. And, you know, this is probably the minutia on this story, but it was a partial profile. But coincidental, you know, it was a partial profile and, it, you know, this is too technical, but it was like old, you know, because it wasn't the night before or anything like that. So we had to, there was a battle of experts on all of this. And, you know, the defense sent it out for additional testing and we called there. So there was a lot of fight about the DNA evidence.
But that was really, I have to say, that was really smart of that police officer, though, to sort of diffuse the situation right there on the scene and make sure that Jeff didn't know that Jeff is about to have a ton of bricks come right down on his head.
Exactly. He had no idea. So fast forward, she goes, mom comes to the station basically to tell the police, my daughter's a whore and a liar. And
yeah, that's why she's so jealous, right?
Yes.
She's so jealous because her daughter is lying about the fact that there's sexual activity going on between no protection, no mama bear in her spirit at all.
And zero. Heather, like you said, I mean, I just want our listeners to know, the ones who are sitting there with their shock faces on, and while Jim and I are expressing, you know, horror, we're not expressing shock because this is all too common. It is all too common in my experience. I tried a case once very similar to this, Heather, although the child was younger. And the mother got up on the witness stand and said the child asked for it because starting when she was 8 years old, she would walk across the house from the bathroom to her bedroom wearing a towel. And so she was, you know, enticed. Yeah. The stepdad. They say things like that. It's horrifying. Unfortunately, it's not as shocking as it should be.
It's horrifying and it's so commonplace. I've had moms tell their daughters, because the girls will report like dad's having sex with me and the mom's like, wear a belt to bed. Wear a belt to bed. So it's harder for dad to get into your pants. It's ridiculous.
It's
really
unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
It is. That's why I am not the big proponent of the whole, you know, mom's like a lioness protecting her young. I mean, I think that certainly happens, you know, definitely happens.
It does.
But I've seen so many cases like you're describing, Heather.
Yeah, but those are the
outliers.
Not only
does the mom not protect the child, but gets angry at the child and blames the child for a situation that the child cannot control.
It was so common. It was the theme of the movie Precious. And, you know, and it's such a horrible thing. And hopefully people are horrified by it. And they don't engage in that themselves when they find out that their child is being sexually victimized, rape by a man that they brought into their child's life.
No, and that's another reason for recantation, right, Heather? I mean, when you have all this family pressure, you've got mom against the child. She's 13. So what's going to happen to her? And I'm hoping you're going to tell us. She probably gets yanked into foster or who knows what happens. And so oftentimes these girls, but boys too, but mostly girls, feel this pressure to recant because they've blown up their own lives because of the disclosure.
Blown up their lives. That's exactly. And that it's so sad because when they do try to finally disclose and things blow up, then they recant and then they're seen as liars. Oh, see, they lied. They said it happened, then it didn't happen. And I understand why a jury would be like, God, we just don't know who to believe, especially when you don't have DNA and that kind of thing. And so it does just exacerbate the situation, the reaction of the family and the people that are around them that are supposed to be protecting them. And I really want to talk about in detail, in more detail, about the assembly bill that was passed that allows for the opening of the statute of limitations. It closes December 31st of 2022, this year, where you can file lawsuits against the institutions that knew or should have known and covered it up. But you got to do it before December 31st for anyone who's been a victim of child sexual assault, from a teacher, a coach, or something like that. There's a window that's opened and you can reach back as far as you can think of.
Okay. And how would they do that? Who do they contact?
Do they contact, Heather? You have a law firm. Can you give us, is there a phone number or an email?
If anyone has questions, they can call us at Fight for Survivors at 949-383-2777, or they can reach us on our website at fightforsurvivors.com. We have a dedicated practice group standing by for any questions at 949-383-2777.
Wow, Heather, this case sounds like it's really blowing up, and this guy does sound like a real dirtbag. So we want to find out more and all the details and what happened, but we'll have to bring you back next week to do it. Thank you so much for being here. This has been quite illuminating from a behavioral perspective. And to our listeners and viewers, thank you for listening and viewing. And until next time, this is Best Case, Worst Case, signing off.
Best Case, Worst Case is an XG production produced by Francie Hakes, Josh Murphy, and Jim Clementi at Empire Studios LA. Engineered and edited by Matt Gergel. Music composed and performed by Simba Tsumba and hosted by Wondery.
You can listen to Best Case, Worst Case on your favorite listening app. We are on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you want to do something about child sexual abuse, Darkness to Light can help. Did you know that more than 90% of the time children are sexually abused by someone they know?
Jim, this isn't about stranger danger. It's about learning the true risks. Darkness to Light's training can help prevent, recognize, and react to child sexual abuse in your community.
When you make the decision to get involved, kids can be protected. It starts with you.
Visit www.d2l.org to take the training and learn more.
That's D2L.org.